Well, now we are ready to talk about why you really came here this evening, Bruce Springsteen. Bruce Springsteen is in the middle of a wildly popular run of his one-man show on Broadway. It is tightly scripted, each performance nearly a mirror of the one before. But earlier this summer, he deviated from the script. He was moved to speak out by the images of children held in detention centers on the U.S.-Mexico border. He said that night, "I never believed that people come to my shows or rock shows to be told anything, but I do believe that they come to be reminded of things, to be reminded of who they are, at their most joyous, at their deepest, when life feels full." He continued explaining that a rock show is, quote, "a good place to get in touch with your heart and your spirit, to be amongst the crowd, and to be reminded of who we are and who we can be collectively." He went on to remind the audience of the importance of action, of acting together in the name of what is right. I was struck by how closely his words parallel our goal for the High Holy Days. We come here to reconnect with ourselves. The soul searching of the season is less about learning something new, but rather about uncovering who you want to be, who you believe you can be. These holy days are about being part of the crowd, singing along to the melodies that fill up your soul. And that is all very nice, but it raises the question, if you can get all that from Springsteen, then what are we doing here? Yes, our tickets are slightly cheaper, but for some of our services, they're almost as difficult to come by. We no longer live under a sacred canopy, presuming that our lives are prescribed by religious identity, nor do we live in a time of affiliation, when who we are as people is determined by the groups of which we are members. So, why be Jewish? Why come here on the High Holy Days when so much of what faith provides can be outsourced, found in small pieces, a CrossFit class, a fish show, a book club, or a poker night? We can and do find pieces of meaning and community scattered around the secular corners of our lives. And yet, we celebrate the Jewish New Year here. In addition to all of our other sources of meaning, we continue to measure our lives in Jewish time. At the end of Springsteen's remarks that night, he references the famous Martin Luther King quote, that the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. And he went on to say, "I've lived long enough to know that arc doesn't bend on its own. It needs all of us leaning on it, nudging it in the right direction day after day. You've got to keep leaning. Each of us, each of your rabbis, believes that our Judaism offers us something different than Springsteen or any other secular source of inspiration. Tonight, my colleagues will share their thoughts on this topic as well. Personally, I believe we absolutely need to push that arc toward justice, and Judaism helps us come together to do the leaning. On March 24th, this past spring, buses lined up in front of Temple Sinai early in the morning to bring us downtown to the March for Our Lives. Before we went to the National March, our Temple Sinai group gathered in a hotel ballroom for Shabbat morning service organized by the Union for Reform Judaism. We were led in prayer by Jewish teenagers from across the country. I will confess, I was worried that it would make for an overly long day, that people wouldn't want to wake up that early for a Shabbat service, but it turned out to be one of the most moving parts of a very moving day. That service used the words and the music of Judaism to tell the story of why we were there. It used our texts and our liturgy to remind us of our obligation to end gun violence, not only on the day of the march, but in the weeks, months, and years to come. It was a morning that reminded us of who we are, but it also reminded us of who we can be, who we are when we come together. It was covenantal, not an isolated, singular experience, but a reminder of the identity that binds us to this work and to each other. Our Judaism situates us in an intergenerational story that asks something of us, that guides us, that moves us to act. It gives us a collective narrative and a history. Our texts remind us why we shall not stand idly by. In the Haftarah we read just yesterday from the book of Isaiah, we read, "Lema'an Zion lo echeshe, for the sake of Zion, I will not remain silent." I don't dare denigrate the boss. The experience of a concert can absolutely bring you to spiritual heights, and there is nothing like a deep bass bumping in your chest to remind you that you are alive. We must seek out the experiences that wake us up and remind us of the gift of living. And our Judaism asks that we consider what we do with this one precious life. Our Judaism demands that we use our lives not just to do well, but to do good. Our Judaism helps us find the moral minion with whom we will act for justice. Our Judaism can hold us when we need to be held. There is a great deal to be done, but we've got to keep moving forward together, never losing sight of the goal, moving ever closer to a better world, because I agree with the words of the boss, I believe in a promised land.
Football Saturdays in Ann Arbor were a major part of my childhood. My family lived and breathed Michigan football, and so did I. One of my greatest memories is traveling to Pasadena, California, with my parents, my brother, my grandparents, an aunt and an uncle, to see the Wolverines defeat Washington State in the Rose Bowl on January 1st, 1998, and win the national championship. Michigan gave me and continues to give me a sense of pride, purpose, and belonging. To this day, when I'm wearing any Michigan gear, whether that be in Ann Arbor, in Washington, or even Tel Aviv, inevitably someone will shout to me that greeting that all Wolverines understand and love, "Go Blue." I am a Michigan man through and through, and the only identity more central to my life is being a Jew. So what does Judaism give me that I can't get from a football Saturday in Ann Arbor? The answer can't be just pride. I get that when I put on the maize and blue. It can't just be about meaning. Following my team over the course of a season, experiencing their ups and lately many downs, is deeply meaningful. It has to be more than common customs or language. That exists in many identity groups. I am Jewish because it gives me a vehicle in which to understand and question the greatest challenges of existence. Judaism brings God into my life, and for me, that is something I can't get anywhere else. When my daughter Eliza was born, we took her to the mikveh to welcome her into the Jewish people with a custom that goes back thousands of years. Shalom and I were married under a chuppah. When I turned 13, I marked that occasion by reading from Torah and leading my community in prayer. All of this transcends me. These rituals do more than link me to generations that have been, to Eliza, and to generations to come. They connect me to God. God is at the center of what it means to be a Jew. Shema Yisrael are the words we sing to Eliza every night before we put her to sleep. They declare the central truth of our faith. Adonai is our God. Adonai is one. Though I'm still not certain of many things about God, Jewish theology reminds me both I am only a speck in this vast universe and that I am uniquely important. Legendary Michigan football coach Bo Schembechler once said, "Those who stay will be champions." Indeed, every Michigan football player who played for Bo and stayed at Michigan for 4 years left with at least one Big Ten championship ring. That's pretty good. But Judaism and our belief in God gives us something that spans all time to eternity, something more significant than a championship. Long ago, the psalmist wrote, "I lift my eyes to the mountains. From where does my help come? My help comes from God, maker of heaven and earth." In both times of happiness and times of trouble, We are wont to look to familiar things that impress us, to the mountains or to Springsteen or maybe Jim Harbaugh. But behind all of these is something beyond. There is God who created those mountains and created each of us. Judaism reminds me of this every day. And on this sacred day, when we are all gathered to celebrate, to catch up with old friends, to schmooze, we remember that there is a higher purpose. Whatever God may mean to each of us, we are here today to celebrate life, to celebrate the start of a new year, to celebrate that God is with us now and always.
Now I appreciate God, Springsteen, and Michigan as much as the next rabbi. But I got here by reading too many books. Culture as History, The Radicalism of the American Revolution, American Slavery, American Freedom, and the Education of Henry Adams, and so many books. I came here seeking earthly wisdom, and I come back for it every year. Before rabbinical school, I was working toward a PhD in American history, hoping to become a professor. But what I really wanted were answers to some of life's big questions. I believed the world could be better. I believed that groups of smart people directing their talents to study, explain, and help find solutions to problems was a great calling, and I wanted to be part of something like that. I wanted to work on ending inequality and poverty and the human proclivity to hurt one another. But the further I got into my studies, the closer I came to understanding that wisdom wasn't what I thought. I began to see that there were no secret keys to solving the vexing problems of being human, and certainly no American history monograph, no matter how great, and I was sure I could write a great one, would make the world a better place. Around that time, I recall reading a few books and articles that confirmed this growing understanding, and I felt deep sadness at the end of the education of Henry Adams. And upon completing a review of the entire life's work of my mentor and advisor. If they couldn't figure out the world, I thought surely I couldn't either. I started re-exploring my Judaism in my late 20s, and I found what Frank Minna would call wheels within wheels. The author of Ecclesiastes, expressed what I was feeling 2,000 years ago. He wrote this: "I found that wisdom is superior to folly, for a wise man has eyes in his head, whereas a fool walks in darkness. But I also realized the same fate awaits them both. The fate of the fool is also destined to me. To what advantage, then, does one gain wisdom? Why was I spending so many hours in that library? There is, Ecclesiastes wrote, nothing new beneath the sun." And I recalled learning the importance of stories. Stories from Judaism and the stories of how people live their lives. And two stories in particular stuck out for me in those early years. One was in the context of studying Genesis. It told of a person who would protest alone in the public square of the city of Sodom, carrying signs about the horrors of society and the need to change course. People would pass by and sneer and spit, and the person's friends would ask, "What do you think you can possibly do? The people will never change." Decades pass, the protester continues the vigil, carrying some of the very same sign across the years. People pass and sneer and spit, and the friends would continue to ask, "What do you think you can do? The people will never change. Why keep this up?" To which the person responds, "I used to stand here and rebuke society, hoping I could change what people do. Now I stand in the square hoping only that what people do won't ever change me." The other story was about a person walking along the beach where low tide had left thousands of starfish washed ashore, stranded in the hot, drying sun. The person would walk along, pick up a starfish, and throw it back in the water. Another person coming upon the scene says, "What's the point of that? This is the course of nature, and besides, there are far too many of them. Look all the way down the beach. Far too many for you to possibly save. What you're doing won't make a difference." At which point, the first person picked up a starfish, threw it back in the water, and said, made a difference to that one. I came to understand through learning those stories that our learning is a personal endeavor as much as it is about understanding ourselves. It's as much about understanding ourselves as it is about fixing the world. And in that sense, what I seek from Judaism is not wisdom in the classic sense, but comfort and a sense of peace. The pursuit of intellectual growth for the sake of classical wisdom can be done in many ways, many settings. But the commitment to learning as a search for inner comfort and peace is done in this kind of a special context, with our loved ones, true fellow travelers and our ancestors by our side, part of a discipline that will inevitably limit the course and the means of our study and yet bring us wisdom. I found no better way to reach for that aspiration than to study the unfolding dialogue of our ancient people's stories and books with those who sit beside us. I also gained humility during those years to see that I wouldn't have been a great game-changing historian, and that my learning wasn't going to solve any of the problems of human civilization. And yet, like that starfish thrower, I could make a difference to at least one person other than myself, that I could cultivate a spiritual discipline of kindness and tikkun olam, based on the ancient principle that one life is as good as the entire universe, and that this community, you and I together, that our history, the scrolls in this ark, those prayer books in your hands, the ways we help each other live better lives, that is the greatest gift of wisdom that any one of us needs. I'm less cynical than Kohelet. All is not vanity. The start of a new year is more than just the turning of a calendar page. We are starting tonight in the process of renewing ourselves and clarifying what we mean to do with all that we've learned in the past year. We are here to relearn the most ancient Jewish lesson again from Ecclesiastes. God is in heaven and you are on earth, and no person can guess the events that will occur under the sun. We're not here to pray for divine intervention or supernatural assistance. From the outset of the Torah, its first verses tell us that this earth and this life and all that we do in it is ours. Or as Springsteen put it that night in the show, the ark doesn't bend on its own. We come here to learn in humility about the limits and about the extent of our agency. We come here to learn, if we turn to the right sources, how it went for us this past year. And we can see from here that in a world where a time is really set for every experience under heaven, simply recognizing the good moments that we had in the past year and committing ourselves to at least that much in the year ahead, as they sing in Hamilton, it will be enough. That gives me comfort. That gives me hope. And that gives me all the wisdom that I need for the new year we begin tonight. May it be for you and for all of us a Shana Tova, a year of goodness and a year of health, a year of peace and a year of change. Shana Tova. Shana Tova.